This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
You know, with all the identity theft going on, you know, my wife and I keep all of our charge cards maxed out so that no one's going to be able to steal anything from us. So did everyone get enough to eat this Thanksgiving? Everybody? Yeah, that's pretty cool. You ever eat so much you have to unbutton the top button of your pants, you know, because just so much food there? You know, I did that last week. I ate so much I had to unbutton the top button and just lay there on the floor and just breathe, you know. And then the manager of Denny's asked me to leave. It was cool this Thanksgiving. We have a rule at our table, you know, because of all the texting and phone stuff, you know, no electronics at the table. It was a little awkward, though, pulling my grandmother's pacemaker from her. But rules are rules, you know? It's good to have things like Thanksgiving and holidays, keep things consistent. You know, have things that we can count on. Things never change, you know? Things have changed so much. Things have changed so much since I was a kid. I remember when I was a kid, the big deal was, like, wearing hats. Like, don't share one another's hats because you might get, like, head lice or something, right? And it's changed so much. Now it's don't share each other's needles. Whoa. You know, that's a big step, right? Can we wear each other's hats now? I'm really sure. You guys remember those? I'm up here reminiscing. Remember those safety scissors that we used to have in school that couldn't cut anything at all? They're so safe. They always tell you not to run with them as if it's going to do any damage, right? I got my worst cuts from the brown paper towels in the school. So then we all grow up. We have kids ourselves. And that's always interesting. Some people make parenting look really easy. You guys notice that? I always had a really hard time with it. But I got these like green Mother Earth parents that I know. And they just do everything awesome as parents, you know. Oh, look, we made our baby food out of fruits and vegetables that we grew and harvested, made ourselves, you know. Kind of makes me mad. I want to punch them right in the compost bin. You know what I mean? Make your own baby food. My kids are lucky. I just hand them a jar. Here, I hope you can open it. Okay, all right. I'll move right along. Yeah, yeah. You're clapping because I'm moving on. It's okay. I can handle. I'm secure in my identity. All right. So if I asked you a question, what are you thinking about? You know, if I came up and said, what are you thinking about? Right. You might say something like nothing, you know, or not a whole lot. But the real truth is that you would be thinking about a whole myriad of things all at once, most of which you're not even aware of, to tell the truth. And, you know, if we're concerned in our lives about changing a behavior, right, like telling horrible jokes, something like that. My wife and I got this chair. It's supposed to be, have magic fingers, right? I think it's got arthritis. I do. I'm just going to keep trying, right? Keep getting up. That was a pretty good one, actually. That just came out of nowhere. All right, so if we have a behavior in our life, we want to change, right? Behaviors are very resistant to change. As some of you know all too well, I know, my own life, we have to get to the underlying issues that are driving these behaviors that we want to change. And, you know, to be really honest with you, just getting kind of real here, most people that grow up in homes of addiction, dysfunctional homes, homes of neglect, homes of abuse, most of those kinds of people are underly connected in ways that they should have been connected, just flat out. And likewise, they are overly connected in ways that they shouldn't be as connected. There's kind of this backwards thing that goes on in people who grow up in highly dysfunctional homes or homes of neglect or homes of addiction. And I don't know if you've noticed this kind of stuff, but when you talk to people that struggle with intense addictions, most of them are afraid of things that most people aren't afraid of. And they're not afraid of things that a lot of people are afraid of. There's kind of this backwards thing that goes on with people with addictions. And, you know, when you grow up in a home that's dysfunctional or full of neglect or abuse, not only are you receiving things that are very negative, but you're not receiving a whole lot of things that you should be receiving. And it's kind of like putting a box over the top of a flower and expecting it to grow up and become something. And yeah, we grow up, we look like adults physically, and we sound like adults. But mentally, emotionally, we are very stunted, and there's things missing. And we will develop in homes of addiction, homes of abuse, homes of neglect, we will develop survival patterns to survive what is going on. You know, getting real here, my wife, growing up in a very abusive home with very intense sexual abuse at a very young age over a long period of time. Her brain, you know, a little 4 or 5 year old kid is not designed to have the emotions of an adult imposed on them and all that that goes on in that way. And her brain basically said, we are going to survive. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to send this trauma into many different parts of you. We're going to compartmentalize it. And we're going to seal some of those areas off. And you're going to survive. And you're going to learn how to go other places and become other things. And we're going to keep you in a little safe spot. I mean, that's just one example. When I first met my wife, and I shared this with her permission, whenever things, we were go out on a date, things would get a little romantic, right? As things naturally would, dating me, of course. Naturally, it's going to go there, you know. My wife says that snuggling next to me is like snuggling next to a bicycle frame. Anyway, I noticed that when things would get really romantic, right? Right? There's some love going on. She would go away. I mean, all of a sudden, she'd just disappear, right? It's like, honestly, one of these things, like, where'd you go? I'd step back and be like, where'd you go? Where are you? Hello? Right? And this is what I'm talking about. There's a survival pattern. Took her a long time to stay, you know, stay here. I developed survival patterns myself, learning how to go way off into some other world, my fantasy world, where I was safe, you know, where I was important, where I had power, control, say-so. You know, I was incredible in my fantasy world, and it was a place I loved to go. But we all have, all of us have developed survival patterns. And what we find out is as we grow up, we get into relationships. We want to love people. We want to live a functional life. Those survival patterns that, yes, at one time helped us, at one time helped us make it through, are now the things that are getting in the way. And they are now the things that are causing us so many problems in our relationship. This is where we have to be really careful, like Dave was saying about religion, being religious. A person like my wife walking into a church and having a preacher say, stop sinning. You know, let's just call it what it is. It's sin, you know. Well, yeah, it's dysfunction. It's brokenness. But those are the very things that kept this person alive, for crying out loud. Let's be really careful. You know, what we're going to say and how we're going to deal with this stuff. And this is intense stuff we're talking about. For crying out loud. So I talked a little bit last week about us having kind of a coat on that we wear. It kind of represents the way we want people to see us. You know, things I want you to know about me. The way I want you to view me. Things I want you to say about me. It's kind of like a coat I walk around with, right? But underneath that coat, you know, there's some darkness, there's some brokenness, defects of character, shortcomings, as the 12 steps would call them, survival patterns, you know, things that I don't want you to see. And so I wear this coat around, but cruise through life long enough and you're going to experience situations that, in a sense, undress you. And those are painful times when you're exposed, those areas and that brokenness, those shortcomings are then exposed for people to see. And we have the greatest opportunity to change when we are undressed in the presence of love. It's one of the reasons marriage represents such a powerful image of our relationship with God, because it is in that relationship that we are allowed to undress in the presence of love. And this church, our recovery church, the recovery community is to represent that very thing, where we can gaze right at someone's brokenness in a very vulnerable time and love them and be agents of change and healing. This happened to me right here when I experienced my relapse. You know, it took a real big chance. I'm going to try this whole community out. You know, I needed you. I needed people that were here, key people that I talked to, that I leaned on, people that surrounded me when I was undressed. And I experienced powerful love. It was a huge upgrade, a huge step up for me, a huge upgrade for, I believe, this community to be able to see such a thing, to be allowed to say, this is here. It's actually been here. Now I'm going to have a chance to heal and grow and have some confidence. Pretty amazing. Addiction thrives and is birthed in disconnection. It's one of the telltale signs of people who struggle with addiction. And a thing that drives addiction is disconnection. And so that's part of the thing that's going to solve the whole thing. So we have a behavior. It's more than a behavior. We are feeling something. There's strong feelings driving this behavior. And there's more than just feeling. Obviously, I'm covering a lot of ground here. Because I took some time to tell you guys some really, really incredible jokes that were, for the most part, unappreciated. So you see, the feeling here is kind of the middle ground between what we're thinking and what we're doing. You know, it's kind of a red flag zone that kind of tells us what we're thinking. And there's more than thinking here at the very center of all of us. You know, this is kind of where it's all going to come from. Our beliefs, right? And that's what God's after with me. That's what God's after with all of us. He's after what we believe. Because if he can get to this, our beliefs, what we're standing on at the core of our being, what we're standing on in our deathbed, what we're standing on in our worst times and our greatest moments, what we believe is going to ultimately determine the fruit of our lives or what's coming out and what we do. Super, super important to recognize that. So we have kind of a set of gauges. It's kind of what I'm talking about a little bit. We have a set of gauges that we naturally have. You know, I've got this gauge here of love and how I'm going to get love. You know, this is a little lever of how I'm going to manipulate to get my needs met. I got other levels, levers here. The judge, you know, how I think things should be, how I think you should be, you know, expectations. I've got all this stuff going on, right? And these are my natural gauges apart from God, that I grow up operating with. And God, in his great love and mercy, calls us to do a thing called repent, which sounds like an old-fashioned word, sounds like a religious word, but it's actually a very powerful and freeing word. And it means to change your thinking in a way, such a way that changes everything else. To turn around, and God offers us a brand new set of gauges and levers over here that come from him and his truth, what he says, his perspective, absolutely incredible. And these gauges have things that these cannot even touch, right? This has spiritual technology embedded in it. This has got some powerful stuff going on. Some of my old gauges and levers are missing altogether. And I got some new ones over here. He's asking me, Stan, let go, take your hands off the levers. Turn around and check this out. This is what we call the truth. Some of this stuff reads in a completely different way. It's totally true. What I'm saying, this is just awesome stuff. And one of the things I had to recognize about recovery and higher power, you know, and some Christians get nervous when people say higher power, but, you know, this is the world you enter in with recovery, is you have to start somewhere. One of the things I have to know about my higher power is that it's not me, right? Your higher power is not you. Your higher power has more power than you, right? I need a power greater than me to do for me what I'm unable to do over here. I'm working over here. You know, I'm sweating and I'm dying. I'm going down. I'm crashing and burning. I'm losing relationships. I'm losing my freedom. I'm losing my dignity. None of this stuff's working, but it's all I know, and I'm going to hang on to it. And God's asking me to let it go. And I'm going to do for you what you can't pull off over here. I'm going to do it over here. So my higher power has more power than me. And the best thing, the biggest thing you got to know is that our higher power, he has your best interest in mind. Totally. In every way and in every situation. I don't know about you, but I need instructions every single day from someone besides me and my wife. That was kind of funny. Could have went on the joke side of the paper. You know, single parent moms or moms that stay at home, they work really hard. You guys notice that? I mean, they're some hardworking people, moms that stay home with kids. You know, I made a big mistake one day and I came home and said to my wife, "You're still in your pajamas?" Whoa. Big mistake. She said, "You see your kids here?" I'm like, "Yeah." She said, "Notice they're still breathing?" I'm like, "Yeah." She said, "Say thank you." Right? Now tell me I'm pretty. All right. So I got this line here. I'm going to draw. Okay. Clearly, you're thinking this is obviously your mind. No. I'm going to draw this little hump there. Okay. And so what we're going to say here is this is going to be, this top of the line is going to represent, I hope I spell this right. You guys can help me out here. Is that right? Conscious? Is this spelled right? I'm testing you, and you passed. Conscious mind, this is what we are aware of. Okay? This is above the line. This is our awareness. We know what's on the stage of our mind at all times. And so we're just going to call this the mind right here. Okay, underneath this is a much larger piece, of course, that we are unaware of. This is what we call the subconscious mind. I'll just write sub, right? And this here we are unaware of. And we're going to call this, you know, if you look up subconscious mind in the Bible, you're not going to find it. It's not in here. Not under that word. But it talks about the subconscious mind all the time. Right, so we're going to write that down, what the Bible refers to as the heart. Okay? It's interesting in Philippians, it tells us that the peace of God will guard your heart and your mind. It's pretty cool. Okay. Can we change our subconscious mind? Can we change our heart? Sounds pretty impossible when you first think about it, but we do it all the time, right? When I first learned how to drive a car, I didn't know anything about it. I had to have someone explain it to me here on this level and tear the whole thing apart and tell me why I did everything I did, right? Jen's back there learning karate, and so she has to learn how and why you do everything you do, every single move, and it's a conscious mind thing, right? How long is it before you're sitting in the passenger seat and a car pulls out and you jam your foot through the floorboard, right? Even though you're not even driving the car, right? Where's that coming from? Now it's in a different place. Now it's a reaction that's coming out of you, right? Out here in Alaska, I was telling my sister, you know, we're from Florida, and you guys told me over and over, the brakes are not your friend out here. The brakes are not, that doesn't make sense to me, you know. Car pulls out in front of me, I jam the brake on, I go faster somehow. That's a really scary thing. And I'm like, it's all I've got. I just keep pushing harder and harder. And it's just like, I hear you guys telling me, take your foot off the brake, take your foot off the brake. And I remember the day I finally trusted enough, I took it off and I had some control all of a sudden. So out here, you know, your life is in your foot's hands. No, basically. But it takes repetition, right? It takes repetition to learn how to do this stuff. And today we started sliding and I was right in step with you guys. Yeah, I was like an Alaskan, you know? But like a very wise person said, a single step does not make a path. You know, it takes repetition. And there's a difference between an email that is sent with an attachment, right? And an email that's sent with something embedded, right? Whole different thing. our subconscious mind, our awareness mind, and the things that we tell ourselves, our thoughts, feelings, behaviors, they're like a house that we build, that we live in. And our perspective coming out of our beliefs, you know, we look for evidence to back up what's coming out of our heart, right? I had a belief for years that if I punched my brother in the face, that he would beat me up something horrible. And I looked constantly for evidence that that was true, right? And then later on in life, as I got older, I started changing what I believed about that. You know, maybe I could take this guy, right? And then I started looking for evidence that perhaps, you know, there was a different truth there, which I think is a great example. Talking about beating my brother up. He told me since I started recovery, I am no longer spontaneous. So I said, oh, really? And I punched him in the face. Oh. All right, so one of the things that's going to come out of here, that's going to embed things in here, is a thing called self-talk, right? Brain researchers tell us that 80% of our brain activity is taken up in a thing called self-talk. That's absolutely crazy. Now, I have to go back and rewind back to my relapse and think about this. And I want you to think about a time when you have failed or failed consistently in an area, or an area where you had, you know, complete victory, awesome triumph, whatever it is. But kind of think about both sides of it and think about this thing called self-talk. And I was very, very cut to the heart when I read this definition out, a growing definition of self-talk and what I really walk around with in my own life and in my own heart. Check this out. Self-talk means to murmur, right? And what am I murmuring? It means to mutter. It means to speak into yourself. Whoa. You know, then I had to back up a little bit. What am I speaking into myself? It means to imagine. It means to rehearse something over and over. You know, now it's getting close to home. It means to repeat. It means to write a script out. And it means to tell a story. And all of us are telling a story all the time in our minds. All of us are like movie producers where we're filming a movie and we're in it. What role are you playing in the movie? It's just tough stuff, at least it is for me. You know, when I walk into a house and there's drugs everywhere and I instantly fall, where did that come from? Well, I'll tell you where it came from. It came from my heart. God's after that. He is pursuing that with the love and the wealth and the royalty and of a king. He wants me to have a king's heart. He wants me to have integrity all the way down to the core of my being. And you know, when it comes to my behavior, yeah, that's important, but this is really important. Really important, because the evidence of this is going to come out here. Now, my behavior is important because recovery is going to happen only in abstinence. If I'm not abstinent, I really don't have a chance to recover. If I'm abstinent, then recovery actually has a chance to happen because things then will surface. Well, I'll have the chance to look at what's really going on. Deb, you want to share a little bit about where you're at? My sister's willing to share something here about where she's at right now.
I'm Debbie, joyfully in recovery. Today is day 19. Thank you. Last Sunday, I was in so much pain. I was literally out of my mind. And today, I'm getting in more of my mind. So I was really fascinated to hear what I'm hearing right now. This is the longest I've ever been off of what doctors put me on to stop being an addict, and it ended up being way worse. And then I found out from other people you could abuse it worse. And I did. And it drove me to do crazy things and be a puppet for a man who really didn't love me. But I was so convinced in my heart, I truly believed that this third husband was my happily ever after. And doggone it, I was going to do everything I could to make it my happily ever after. Mm. Being in an insane relationship for over 9 years, you end up doing things that you would never dream ever in a million years that you'd ever do. But I became a puppet on on dope, and it only took a few years, and my happy, vivacious self became so focused on death that I just walked around thinking, how am I going to do myself in, because I just can't do this anymore. This happily ever after is not happening. But then I get a little bit of hope and think, okay, maybe it's worth saying I'm going to stay in here. And it was driving me insane. I look through my journals and I don't understand how I'm still alive. At the very end, just a few weeks ago on a Sunday night, I'm walking down the street in the middle of a horrible, horrible place.
Yes.
Next to a person I didn't even know, selling her body and trying to teach me. I'm like, this isn't me. God, please don't let there be anybody that pulls up. It's just absolutely, I couldn't believe where I was. And I finally started praying something different. I used to say, God, help me to figure this out. I'm going to make this work. It's my happily ever after. You know, I'm going to make this work. And not that night, I started seeing everything for what it really was. And I said, God, I can't make this work. I can't. Help me. Have mercy. Get me out of this mess that I put myself into, believing the wrong things. I'm so sorry. Have mercy. And 2 days later, I'm flying to Alaska from Florida, thinking, what in the world? But I'm so... It's just a miracle, because now my mind, I'm starting to feel my feelings. I'm starting to have hope again. And for a person who was ready to die at a drop of a pen for years, I'm a miracle in front of you today by God's love purely. Nothing by me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Deb. And the important part she's saying there, too, is that the abstinence and being free from the chemicals and all the stuff, it gives her feelings are now coming back. And some things you don't want to feel, but this is part of recovery. And when a person abstains from acting out, then things can surface, and then they can get dealt with in the way where we apply the truth to them. You know, I got to admit, last night I got up like 2:30 in the morning, and I just have a wonderful prayer life, but it's very strange. It's very weird, but I love my weird prayer life. When it comes to this self-talk and stuff, it's gotten me 5 years of clean time. It's gotten me time that I've never, ever had before God. And so I act on it. And, you know, last night I put this towel over my head, and I had this towel over my head, like, you know, I put it over like Jesus, you know, and I had these candles in the bathroom. And I'm like, Father, it is your son before you early this morn. And now I request before you. And I just have this prayer life where I see myself as a son. And I love it. I begin to murmur, mutter, speak into myself, imagine, rehearse, repeat, write a script, tell a story of how I'm a son of God. You know, if I told you guys that there was a $20 bill taped to the underside of one of these chairs, you know, a lot of you might take a peek, you know, and look. The truth is, there's not a $20 bill under there. But what it would prove is that lies affect our lives in much the same way the truth does, in the sense of it creates behavior. You know, it creates an activity, and our brain will form a picture and head towards that picture. Right? One little example, I'll only tell a couple of these really quick to not take up too much more time. But they had a 2x4, and they had these firemen. They were going to walk across it, and they had this group of people already coached to speak in the negative to these guys. In other words, when they went to walk across it, they said, don't fall, don't fall, don't slip, don't lose your balance. Right? And it was all negative. And 80% of these guys fell. Okay? Incredible. This is a whole brain research thing I was reading. And then a week later, they had them come back, and they re-coached the group, and they had them say the positive. Stay focused. Stay on the board. Keep balance. 80% of those guys made it across. To me, that's crazy. That's amazing. right? And they talked about when you're working with your kids, which I'm really horrible at, but they say working with the kids, to you can't say to them, don't run out in the road, don't run out in the street, because they're hearing run out in the street, right? Their focus is the street. And they say that you get much better results if you say, stop at the end of the driveway. You know, you tell them what to do and not what not to do, right? And I'm always telling my wife, don't fall. You know, it's just terrible. I got to regroup there. They did a wiring thing where they had these guys wire a box, red wire, blue wire, green wire, red wire, blue wire, green wire, like, and they did a brain scan on these guys. They called them back a week later, same thing, but with no wire box. I want you to do it in your mind. And so they're like, okay. And they sat there and did the whole thing through their mind. When they looked at the brain scan, they could not tell the difference with the brain activity of when they had the actual box and when they were seeing it in their mind. And so here I'm keying in, and God's faithfulness in me is showing me, Stan, you know, when you're laying there in your bed and you're doing drugs and you're grabbing your rig and you're doing this stuff, you're doing this stuff, right? Your brain's doing this stuff. You're thinking like an addict. The brain scan would say, this guy's doing drugs. It's crazy. So to close this session out here and not take up any more time, I'll just say that as Christians, it says in Hebrews that we believe by faith what is visible was created by what is invisible, right? What is seen was created by what is not seen. And that's a hard thing for some people to grasp. But we see this right here. We will get a thought that's invisible. And that thought will generate a feeling. Now it's becoming visible. And then that will generate a behavior. Now it's manifested into the visible world. And what is invisible becomes visible right there in our very lives, in our own psyche. When Jesus died, he died on Golgotha, the skull. People say that if you look back, it looked like the cross was on a skull on the hill. And so we see him, it could have been a hip bone, it could have been a knee, but it was a skull. And part of the thing I love about that is how he died to change our thinking, to change us here, the very center of what we carry around, our brains. And Jesus believed who he was. He believed in the Father's love. He believed in his Father's care. So much so that with nails in his hands, so much so he believed he was powerfully loved that with nails in his hands he could say, forgive them. With nails in his hands he could say, take care of my mom. With nails in his hands he was concerned, not about himself, he was concerned about me and you. That's power. That's power under pressure. We've never seen it before, and that's our example. God does not see me as an addict. He doesn't see me as a loser. He doesn't see you as a loser. His kids aren't losers. And it's really that simple. He died to make you a brand new person. And he's saying, just take your hand off the old gauges, turn around, and I want you to embrace a brand new life. And I want you to challenge anything that doesn't agree with me. That's what our Father says. Challenge anything that doesn't agree with what I'm telling you, because what I'm telling you is the truth. And what I'm telling you will set you free. That's what I'm up against in my time of relapse. And that's what you're doing right now. I'm so grateful for it. So the repetition of believing the truth, doing the meditations, doing the reading, seeing it, imagining it, rehearsing it, seeing yourself in the story like Christ. I even tell myself the story of my relapse, but I see myself doing that, walking through that as a son, what that would have looked like if I would have trusted God and my Father and meditated on the right things, and what that would have looked like, and the joy it would have brought. Now, had I walked through that maybe a different way, perhaps a different way. And to get that into my subconscious, into my heart, to believe that you and I, we are awesome spirit beings of magnificent worth. And meanwhile, I encourage us to be allowed to be undressed in the presence of love. Let people see. I let people here see it in a big way. My sister, we want to be transparent. My wife in this group. And I do it even more on a greater extent with a small group of men that I meet with. I share even more on a deeper level the details of where I struggle and my failures and my hopes, my aspirations. And then even on a deeper level with a one-on-one, my sponsor. Someone has to see you. Someone has to know currently what's going on. We all need people in our lives that aren't impressed with us. It's good for us to see some of the rotten spots and go, look, ah, yuck, I'm dealing with this. Help me out. Don't tell anyone. This is where we're going in our sessions coming. It's going to be awesome and powerful. I'm so grateful. I love you guys so much for your love and your care and your response to people that are hurting in this room. Let me pray. Thank you, Father, for your saving grace, for offering us a brand new identity, free as a gift, free as a bird, just free. A free gift of a new life, a new identity. And we can see the truth that sets us free. We can have it right now. We can begin to walk it out in the presence of love. You just love us so much. Heal us where we hurt and help us become agents of change in other people's lives where we are free to love one another in the same way you love us. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys.